We're going to bring things a bit more local now. And joining me here in the WGN Skyline studio is Dina Rollman. She's with Green Thumb Industries. She's founder and president of Illinois Women in Cannabis and is part of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois. And Dina, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
I thought it'd be a good idea to have you here because, yes, there's all this talk about, oh, January 1, weeds legalized, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot that needs to be done in advance of that. And just because the law's been signed doesn't necessarily mean that things are all going to be ready for this.
Well, it's true. There is a lot of work involved for everybody to do, including the industry, the members of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois, who are the existing medical cannabis operators. There are 21 cultivation facilities that exist right now in Illinois, cultivating medical cannabis only. We are eagerly awaiting the regulations that will be published by the Department of Agriculture that tell us how we are to sort of convert or add to our facilities to grow adult use cannabis.
Yeah, and the issue being that since you were already under kind of a regulatory structure for medical use cannabis, that this would be the first kind of phase to let the existing growers continue and develop it even further.
Yes. The Governor Pritzker, who signed this bill into law and has been, you know, a very vocal supporter of medical and adult use cannabis, has set the target date as January 1 to launch this program. And so, you know, the most, you know, critical element of being able to launch that is having
product
to sell, right? So, yes, there's a lot of work being done right now. I think every cultivator in the state is in the midst of building out their existing facilities to increase capacity, staffing up to deal with, you know, that increased production level.
But do we really know what demand is going to be?
Well, there have been demand studies done, including Representative Cassidy and Senator Staines, who sponsored the adult use bill. They commissioned an independent third-party demand study to give them, you know, a baseline expectation of what is needed. The current operators, the current medical cannabis cultivators, because they are not limited in their expansion, they are able to meet those capacity demands for the next, I think, 3 to 5 years. And then at some point, there may be a need for additional capacity.
But will the demand be met on January
1? That is, I think, a good question. As you know, it does take approximately 4 months to get a cannabis plant from seed to, you know, harvested and packaged. We're sitting here in August right now. As I said, I think every cultivator is doing everything they can to do their part to meet that demand. And we'll see, you know, how things go on January 1.
We're speaking with Dina Rollman with Green Thumb Industries, founder and president of the Illinois Women in Cannabis and the cannabis part of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the WGN Skyline studio by Dina Rollman with Green Thumb Industries and part of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois. We're talking about the rollout, as it were, for January 1st for legalized adult use of cannabis and some of the issues that are involved with that. And we talked about the cultivating facilities, in essence, growing out for in anticipation of this, but where do you deliver the product? How is that all going to work?
So, you know, this is a highly regulated program in Illinois, and since November 2015, there have been highly regulated, we call them dispensaries. These are the retail stores where people, you know, right now medical cannabis patients can buy the product, and as of January 1, adult use customers will be able to buy. There are currently 55 of those dispensaries spread out throughout the state.
Right now.
Right now, 55 that are open and serving patients. Those stores all have the right to add that adult use component to their store. So they're selling both. They're serving two kinds of customers still starting January 1. They can continue to serve the patients, and then they can start serving adult use cannabis patients. Then in addition to that, those existing 55 are each granted the right to open a secondary location that is to serve adult use customers only. And that is, again, starting January 1. So as of January 1, hypothetically, there could be 110 dispensaries throughout the state.
We've been watching, I think, some of the debate over that communities are having about whether to have a dispensary in their community. Where does the industry kind of fit in these debates?
Well, so this is really becomes an important partnership between the dispensary itself and the community where it sits. What we've heard so far is that in every community, all 55, it sounds like those relationships are pretty strong. There have not been complaints about any of these stores being, you know, a nuisance of a neighbor, no security incidents. So in terms of the medical program, that partnership has gone extremely well and is really, I think, a model for the country. But when the conversation turns to adult use, it's a really new conversation for a lot of these communities. Many of them were really kind of caught off guard that the adult use bill passed and didn't have an existing conversation going about how do we want to.
They didn't really have a stake in the game.
They didn't, and it really wasn't on a lot of communities' radars. So what we're seeing now this summer, you know, in July and August, is a lot of city council meetings happening all over the state, and from the smallest towns to the biggest suburbs, with city councils and village managers in the community discussing, you know, do we want to allow this? And if so, how do we want it to look for, what's the right fit for our community? Where should that dispensary be located? Should it be in an industrial part of
zoning issues?
Zoning and land use. So that's kind of the name of the game right now, because there's just important decisions about, you know, where will the store have, you know, an adequate size? Where will there be adequate parking? Where will it not be disruptive to the neighbors? Because it is expected that there'll be a lot of traffic at these stores. So it becomes a conversation for the community and then, you know, for the dispensary operators to say, this is how we want to partner with you to make sure that this works well and is well suited for your community.
But you've heard some of these communities say, well, you know, this is not what we want for our family-oriented type community.
Certainly, you know, I think just maybe one or two communities have decided to opt out, and that is a decision they can revisit later. It doesn't have to be permanent. They don't lose the right to opt in. And then I would say the more common conversation going on right now isn't about opting out. It's about how to opt in. And, you know, the state statute itself gives the community the right to decide where, you know, again, how to zone it. So where in your community do you want these stores? And then also how many? Perhaps you want to limit it to just one in your community and you feel like that's a good test case. And let's see how that goes and how our community feels about it. And then we can always add more later. Some will allow two or three, or, you know, depending on their population. So there is some measure of local control being given here so that, you know, communities can come up with what's right for them.
What about as far as municipal taxation?
So that is a nice incentive, I would say, for many a municipality to say, you know, we're willing to try this out because we are entitled to impose a municipal tax up to a rate of 3%. There has been some guidance from the legislative sponsors saying, you know, you may be thinking you should automatically charge the full 3%. However, the higher the tax rate gets on this product, you may in fact see that some people continue buying from illegal dealers rather than turning to this legal regulated market. So there is a word of caution being sent there by legislators, effectively, you know,
right,
be cautious here about how much you tax.
So now I know there's all kinds of talk about stuff going on for the fall veto session already. And I know there are a number of issues that you all feel need to be addressed even as we go forward to January 1 that this legalization bill did not take care of.
Yeah, you know, there's a productive conversation that will happen this fall between the industry and Senator Heather Staines and Representative Kelly Cassidy. You know, they did a tremendous job getting this bill passed in really an extremely short amount of time. And so the trailer bill discussions will really be about, you know, cleanup of some minor issues. You know, when a bill is getting sort of drafted at 2 a.m, you know, there might be some clerical errors that get made and, you know, just some unintended language that got in there. So there'll be, you know, productive conversations this fall just to get everything kind of cleaned up.
And is, when we talk about legalized marijuana, I think a lot of people just automatically think of, you know, rolling a reefer. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there are various aspects of the product that, which is already what's current in the medical practice.
Oh, yes. I think people would be pretty astounded to know that the days of just having one option of how to consume cannabis being, you know, like you said, reefer, grass, weed, pot, what, you know, the green stuff that everybody's familiar
with. Those old
with.
College days, yes.
Right. You know, I think when people walk into a licensed dispensary now, frankly, they're really just impressed and a little incredulous at the wide variety of options there are for consuming. And a lot of that has been keyed to serving a medical population that does not want to smoke as a way to consume. So there are so many different ways to consume now. I mean, everybody's, I think, now pretty familiar with the concept of edibles, you know, eating
right.
marijuana products, right? And that could be, you know, a cookie, a brownie, a chocolate, a gummy, things like that. But there's really a lot of innovative ways as well now. There's, you know, patches that you can put on your skin, a transdermal patch where it's releasing that cannabis sort of through your skin. There's drops that you can put under your tongue to get it that way. There's, of course, you know, vape pens, you know, lotion, salves, popcorn, soup, I mean, icy pops. I mean, there's just sort of there's sort of the novelty items and then a lot of sort of more medically focused products. And then as this adult use program launches, I think we'll just continue to see all sorts of innovation, always something new for consumers to be able to try.
It'll be interesting to see what happens after January 1. Dina Rollman with Green Thumb Industries, who's the founder and president of Illinois Women in Cannabis and part of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois. Dina, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this.